work works 5 years later.
Yes, and you were one of the first people.
I was one of the first people to interview you about the show when you were first starting.
So that was about 5 years ago?
Yeah, Mr. Jester.
Bob Jester. Yeah. I think he was actually my second interview.
Yeah.
David Nice was my first.
Okay.
I've got a really great portfolio of interviews that I've done on the North Fork. But you just heard Gianna Volpe reminiscing with me about the beginnings of this program 5 years ago.
Yes.
So this is North Fork Works. I'm Hazel Khan and Gianna Volpe. I'm very happy that she's my interviewee today.
Good afternoon, Hazel. It's been, I've seen you out and about on the North Fork. That's sort of how it works out here.
And I was thinking that I have seen you behind things, behind a cash register checkout counter at a grocery store. I've seen you behind the bar of more than one restaurant.
Correct.
And I've probably seen you on the street, but probably not that much because you're always working.
That's right. Right now, as far as tending bar, 7 nights a week, 4 doubles. And that's just tending bar at about 3 different places. Well, 4. This Friday, I'll be in Bridgehampton, my radio show in Riverhead, which is the Gianna Volpe Report, going on 3 years now.
The radio is once a week?
Correct. 8:15 to 9 every Thursday morning on 1390 WRIV, 1390WRIV.com. And then I podcast the show out online on YouTube, coming soon to iTunes. Hazel, you're correct in saying that behind things, I wear a lot of different hats, such as life here on
the North Fork.
Correct.
I want to talk about that. But when you say behind things, or we both say behind things, you're not, however, behind the times. Because in many ways, you're actually very much of these times.
Right. Of this era.
I mean, we talked about whether you're a millennial or not, and you're kind of a borderline.
When I was going to school at the University of Missouri, getting my photojournalism degree, we had to do documentaries on our classmates, and the woman that did the interview on me titled it "The Modern Old Soul." So I'm very much into history, antiques. I love writing letters. I love antique books. I love antiques in general. I love knowing where we came from as a species, as people. But I also have always been an entrepreneur and looking for new ways of doing things.
When you say always, when was your first shot at being an entrepreneur?
I would say I was about 10 years old. I was in elementary school. And I had several different businesses. I would save money so I could buy ice cream. And I actually just recently got a Susan B. Anthony. Someone gave to me when I was tending bar. It was Harold Schechter, the author. Mm. And he gave me a Susan B. Anthony. And I was overjoyed. I love coins, collecting coins. I had a free editing service.
Editing
so
what?
Other people's papers. In fifth grade it was. Things that I would charge for, I would make mazes.
You mean on paper?
Yes. I would burn designs into leaves with a magnifying glass.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. I got in trouble for that one.
And what, people would pay you for that?
Like 10 cents. Mm-hmm. 10 cents here and there. Yeah. Eventually you get to, you do 10.
To millionaire state.
You get to 10 and then you have a dollar and then you can buy an ice cream sandwich.
All your income went into ice cream.
For ice cream. Yeah, the struggle is real, Hazel.
So we haven't finished talking about your radio show. What is the show?
Like you, I interview local people, or it's East End centric. If it's on the East End, it has a place on my program. I'm a journalist first and foremost. I let the news and what's going on sort of guide me.
What was the last thing that you did?
Last week was John Nagel, who was a performer at my monthly variety series, the Revolution Number 9 Variety Series, which is every second Thursday at the Crazy Fork in Matatuck. That's a variety series that I started. It was during the winter, basically to give people a place, artists, musicians.
A place to
to perform,
yeah,
so that there's something going on. It gets pretty quiet out here during the winters. And it was, for me, someone who works so much, I didn't have enough to do.
And
I love the East End during the winter.
Yeah.
And that was one of the reasons why I sort of knew that this was the place for me. I embraced the East End winter the first winter it came. Let's see, March. I moved here in March 2011. And it was, a little before the season had started. It's a very small, insular, Thai community. And
are you part of it now?
In some ways, very much so. And in other ways, one can never be. As a journalist, one of my most recent pieces was called The Hairlegger's Guide to Shelter Islands. And it was basically the insider's guide to tourism on Shelter Island, which, as far as the East End is concerned, is one of the most insular of insular communities.
Yeah.
That's where I started my career as a journalist five years ago now. So that was 2011, September of 2011, that I started at the Shelter Island Reporter. That was my first time covering a political election. The professional journalist understands that biaslessness, does it even exist? So you have to have an understanding about yourself and what your biases are, and then be able to separate yourself from it, they say, to produce, quote-unquote, a fair and balanced piece. It can be incredibly difficult. It's a very confusing time. The issue is really with the binary. It's with any binary. With any time that you are saying that there are two sides, like they say there's two sides to every story, that's baloney. There are many sides.
Exactly.
There are as many sides of an issue as there are people on the planet. Binaries are a trap. It's easy for people to think that they're in opposition if you divide them that way. For me, someone who is a critical thinker, I've always had a hard time with the binary.
But the thing about binaries, the either-or, as I know that Eastern religions, Eastern belief systems say it's not either-or, it's both-and, that you can have two ideas and they can coexist.
Compatibilism, like soft compatibilism with fate and free will. You know, there are people who believe that you can have both, that both can exist together.
Mm-hmm.
And to sort of bring this full circle, my first time covering an election, a third party candidate won the popular election on Shelter Island. Glenn Waddington, he was a ferry boat captain for the South Ferry, and he was on the town board, and he ran against incumbent Jim Dougherty, a Democrat, for supervisor, and won the popular election. And then lost the absentee ballot counts. But people voting along party lines that don't necessarily live year-round on the island. And I won my first award. It was a second place political coverage at the Better Newspaper Contest at the New York Press Association up in Saratoga Springs for a piece looking at the absentee ballot counting process. I went to Yaphank and spent the day and noted they didn't even have a place for Glenn to sit because the way that everything was structured was for a two-party system. The difficulty of introducing anything but the binary, the system is set up for a certain way to be. It's been sort of me going back to my roots as an entrepreneur because I was forced out of journalism. Being a full-time reporter at the Suffolk Times, the Riverhead News Review, and the Shelter Island Reporter, I was very fulfilled. I got my degree at the country's first and finest journalism school in the nation, 1908, the University of Missouri, Columbia, MIZZOU, concentration in photojournalism and a minor in creative writing, which was my first love growing up.
What year did you graduate?
2010, December of 2010. And then March of 2011, I moved here.
I see.
I moved back to the East Coast, and my boyfriend at the time, I said, you can come with me if you'd like. I'm going to be home with my family. And he ended up being the vineyard manager at McCary, so he moved to the East Coast to be with me. I moved to the East End to be with him. And then I stayed because I felt a sense of home that I'd never really known. This place has sort of a magnetic pull on people like you and people like me, people who are of multiple interests, creative artists.
I think other people would say this is actually quite a closed society. It's quite a conservative, closed, not particularly welcoming.
I don't know. What I like to say is that the East End chooses its own, and you need to choose it. It's a two-way street. You either need to have made your money elsewhere, the F you money people, like I've got, you know, or you need to work. I'm one of the latter. You got to work like an animal, wearing as many different hats as it takes to stay here.
Talk about the hat.
For me, I am a freelance writer, photographer, radio personality, bartender, private security guard. Now I also sell, and also a salesman, and doing, you know, PR work. I kind of had to go to the dark side a little bit as far as journalism's concerned, because I'm not working full time. So, you know, now I have my radio show, and bringing in sponsorships.
It's a commercial radio station.
It's a commercial,
WRIV.
Correct. Mm-hmm. And so with that venture, I absolutely use my journalistic instincts and training in my approach and how I do my interviews. But I also am on the air, have sponsors for my radio show, and use it for extra income. That part is growing.
And you feel uncomfortable with that a bit?
You know what? At first, I didn't even want to get into it. Something that I've had to do, and that's something that you're seeing with the change in, let's talk about newspapers, advertorial content is becoming king as the industry changes, as people figure out how to keep the industry alive and moving into the digital era, as it were. It's a very weird time.
Things are shifting. The shapes are not the same as they were. The borders, the boundaries are changing.
One of my favorite journalists, Hunter S. Thompson, as Hunter would say, when the going gets weird, the weird turn pro. I'm watching my industry change a bit from the outside, and it's actually sort of interesting for me because this most recent presidential election, for example, I had been sort of kicked to the curb by my industry, by sort of infiltrators of my industry, and that was very hard for someone who is so serious about journalism. That was incredibly difficult. Mm-hmm. I was named one of the four Rookie Reporters of the Year in the state of New York by the New York Press Association after being fired from my job as a full-time journalist, which I put my entire heart and soul into my work, and it was devastating for me, absolutely.
Millennial journalist Gianna Volpe is talking about journalism and how she lives and works on the East End of Long Island. This is Hazel Khan and North Fork Works on WPKN Radio.
I had to take jobs tending bar in order to stay out here because I love the East End so much. Freelancing for 8 different publications, trying to find a full-time job back in my industry, being unsuccessful at that, just losing hope. My tipping point was this past presidential election. I was now managing a bar in Mattituck. I turned on the news and they're doing something about the presidential election. I remember the person I was watching the news with that night saying that they felt like it was 9/11, the way that everyone was responding. And I thought that was phenomenally interesting. Difficult time.
Yeah, it is a difficult time. There is still the future to talk about.
Yes.
I mean, how are you feeling now? Are things getting better for you?
My belief when the going got weird in my industry, not just for me, but for newspapers, for news organizations, my belief was there will be a reformation of some sort. And interestingly enough, I think that even the presidential election has brought out the public's understanding of the need for sourcing, for checking your sources, for not rushing. I always love being the one breaking the news and getting there first. But what I care most about is that it's right. And that, I think, has been a downfall among a lot of the new gen journos. We don't care about we want to beat out that guy. The sense of competition between the news organization. I'm talking about new gen journalism. I'm talking about this changing industry.
I see.
The move to digital, bring it first. Think about all of the issues. Think about news. You know, it's the need to check your sources, to be right, has never been more important, and people are starting to realize that.
Because I'm also thinking of the stuff you said earlier on about loving antiques and old books, and all. The thing about those is they are true.
Yes!
They're not fakes, they're not reproductions.
Right.
They are the real thing.
Right.
I think that maybe all that interest in history and in antique stuff is also an antidote to the digital world and
right.
to the non-material world.
All I know is that I am a type of person that cares about facts, what is true, what is real, and what is going on.
To what extent would you say it's true of you and maybe other journalists that the way your training actually is also how you act in your life? So if you're having a regular conversation, do you feel that you are conscious always of having evidence for what you say, on meaning what you say? Or
I try to live that way. And I think that's what made me good at being a reporter. That's how I've lived my life. You know, in kindergarten, we would have this thing called the Daily News. My hand was up all morning long. I remember kids gathering around an empty chrysalis of a butterfly, and I was very, very much into science and the natural world and reading anything I could get my hands on as a small child. And they're gathered around this empty cocoon. And I'm saying, what are you looking at? And they're saying, oh, there's a butterfly or there's a cocoon. And I said that the cocoon is empty. There's nothing in there. Mm-hmm. And they said, no, this is a cocoon. It's a butterfly. And I showed them how it was broken. And everyone started getting angry at me. And you killed it. You killed this butterfly. And I'm saying, no, this is, trying to educate.
The butterfly's gone.
Yeah, the butterfly's not here, you know? And so educating and understanding how people en masse think and behave has long been an interest of mine.
In your social, personal life, are you aware of that?
Well, where I would laugh, because working as much as I do, I don't have much of a personal life to speak of.
But you see people. I mean, when you're in the bars, you have conversations.
That is my personal life. I guess that's my social life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I just wonder if these values transfer.
Yes,
all the
they
time
do. I like to look at things very journalistically. Mm-hmm. Here's the facts of the matter, and looking at all sides of an issue. A journalist is a very difficult person to have a fun sort of conversation with. For me, never underestimate the influence of a situation over an individual. Journalism, in the beginning, it was hard for me to write anything because my editor would say, well, was it a cedar tree? And I would say, well, I'm not an arborist or, you know, I don't have a degree in this. How can I really say for sure what kind of a tree it was or what anything is? Those struggles and really being trained by veteran journalists, I am so grateful for that backbone.
Do you have journalist friends?
Yes.
And do you feel more comfortable with them than with other people?
No. For me, it's not like that. But when it comes to journalists, I would say that I am more comfortable with veteran journalists than I am with the quote-unquote new school, those that are my peers. And that, again, coming full circle, is something that has been going on my whole life. When I was a munchkin and growing up on the Palisades, I spent most of my time conversing with people in their 40s and 50s. People my age were a mystery for me. And that's why I became a journalist. I remember as early as third grade at recess writing, Why Do They Follow? I would say, about the girls walking back and forth on the field. I noticed like there was always a different girl in front of the line. The boys fight like vicious dogs. People drinking from the water fountain, so succulent and wet. You know, I'm talking about the water. And I'm in third grade, and I'm trying to understand my peers. The people that I talked to were the librarian. I was the only kid allowed to buy the books. They would sell the books that they were going to get rid of for cheap. In fifth grade, I started the fifth grade Times. I printed my own newspaper. And I didn't sell it. I did it just as a public service. Maybe I would have down the line, but the first issue was free. And I remember I distributed it before school on the sidewalk so that it wouldn't be on school property. I don't know how I knew these things, but I remember I had a solo that year in the school play. I was Lewis and Clark's dog, Scannon. And we were having play practice, and the principal came in and said she had heard about the newspaper, that there was this newspaper that had been distributed, and I had mentioned some students' names, like, so-and-so is going out, so-and-so.
Page 6.
Yes. And the last page of the paper, I remember, said this newspaper is recyclable and encouraging people to recycle it. So my principal, they said, we heard about the newspaper and we want everyone to give us their copies right now. And I'm yelling in fifth grade that they're violating my right to a free press. I'm talking about my constitutional rights.
Great.
As a fifth grader. And I remember one kid saying, I already threw my copy away. And throughout the years, I would have different people in my grade say, I still have my copy.
Really?
Of the fifth grade Times. So that was sort of my start in journalism.
What I want to ask you is how you see the future here for you on the North Fork, on the East End. This time, will you still be here?
I'm going to mention another good friend, Beth Young. Talk about serious veteran journalists. And not only because she's been doing it, but because she does it right. You know, because she definitely cares about reporting accurately and thoroughly. Beth Young gave me a great term, bifocal. It's best to be bifocal. So though I moved out to the North Fork, when I moved to the East End, I've now migrated to the South Fork. I live in Southampton currently and have sort of fallen for the South Fork in a way that I never expected to as a business person. And even as a journalist, understanding both sides of our East End.
We know how very much divergent they are, these two cultures of the North and South Fork.
Right, but returning again to our conversation before, binaries are a trap. A trap made to form war. Though they are different in many ways, there are as many similarities as there are differences. You know, when you really strip it all away, these are very old school communities with new school thinking people. There's modern old souls. In some ways, it's the perfect place for me. Yeah. I don't know where will I be. Number one, I know I am optimistic. You have to have hope. And you have to have faith, or you really have nothing. When I think about the future, where will I be in a year? Will I be on the East End? Absolutely. Will I be on the North Fork or the South? I have no idea.
Beth lives in between. It's a great metaphor.
And it's a place I think about all the time. I don't know where I'll be.
Thank you very much, Gianna Volpe.
Miss Kahan, it was an unbelievable honor to return here and to talk with you. You and your voice inspired me so much.
Really?
When I was listening to our interview together 5 years ago now.
That you did?
That I did.
I don't know if I ever heard it.
You wouldn't have, because I was just listening, because I recorded all of my interviews.
Because it was for the paper.
Correct. And I always recorded my interviews because I was very serious about quoting people accurately. I would transcribe everything. And I just listening to your voice, and this woman's voice is incredible. Her story is incredible. It was so inspiring to me, and it was just such an honor to be a guest on your program. Long been a dream of mine. And here we are.
Well, here we are. I'm very happy that this all worked out today.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, Gianna Volpe. You're on your way to work at a bar. 10 minutes, you have to be there.
I have to be at Amato in Manitouk.
That was millennial journalist Gianna Volpe talking about journalism and how she lives and works on the East End of Long Island. You can hear Tidings on the second Wednesday of the month at 7:30 p.m. All Tidings programs are archived as podcasts on hazelkahn.com and produced by Tony Ernst.